Hello and welcome to Taking Care of Business. I'm Jackie Mitchell. Today we discover some of the latest developments in technology, innovation and marketing, and how you can use them to drive success in your business. Today's show is all about small business, big ideas, and then we've got some really big ideas that we're going to share with you today. Well, I'm not going to share, I'm just going to facilitate that, where four guests are going to share those with you today as we examine the business landscape. With a focus a little bit on innovation and technology, today's show is made possible by our innovative friends at eView Real Estate. Our first guest worked his way from sales and customer service to be chief operating officer at Australia's premier freight management and has just launched a crowdsourced delivery service. Welcome, Marshall Hughes.
Good morning, Jackie. How are you?
I'm very well. Very good that you're here today. Now, crowdsourcing, I always find it quite interesting. Crowdsourced delivery. What is crowdsourcing?
So crowdsourcing is essentially using a lot of people to do something and using a little bit of their time to do something. Some examples of crowdsourcing might be NASA uses thousands of sort of amateur astronomers around the world to look for asteroids, or a government that can't make a decision might put out a vote to everyone in the country and ask them their opinion. Mm-hmm. So using sort of the power of a lot of people to do something.
Right. And you have just launched, not long ago, your crowdsourced delivery service called Parcel, but it's got a weird spelling.
It's P-A-S-S-E-L.
Why?
Parcel is actually the collective noun for a group of people.
So oh, is could, it really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, you could have a parcel of radio hosts, for example.
Oh, I like that. Okay, that's very, very nice. So tell us a little bit about Parcel. What is it?
So Parcel is essentially a same-day crowdsourced delivery service for retailers, where we get regular people who are in the shopping centre to do the deliveries on their way home.
Okay, so they're not actual official couriers. They're just everyday people.
Correct, yeah. To get one courier to do one job is expensive. It can be $25, $35, $45 because a courier, professional courier needs to earn that money to earn a living. Whereas people who are either working in retail or who are actually at the shops and we send them a message saying, hey, Jackie, your next door neighbour's just ordered a shirt. Would you like to deliver that on your way home for $10? It's a different sort of discussion.
Okay. Is it Uber for couriers?
Yeah, it's probably the most common question is it an Uber for couriers? The distinct difference is that people driving for Uber or so-called crowdsourced courier companies are actually trying to earn a living. So they're paying to run a vehicle. They've got their overheads, their expenses. They're paying tax for that.
Yeah, and they've got to have minimum hours sometimes to maintain their status or something.
Like yeah, you're basically saying that you're going to be a driver and this is your job.
Yeah.
And when people do that, they need to be earning $35 or $40 an hour
right,
just to cover their costs and keep themselves on the road and make better than minimum wage.
Okay, so this is just using everyday people and it's sort of helping people out a little bit. But and how they get paid? Is it $10 flat fee that you get paid?
Yeah, it's $10 flat fee. So you did touch on a really good point. It is really just like helping someone out. Mm. It's sort of a modern day version of can you pick something up for the shops for me?
It's like friend shipping.
It's possibly one of the names we considered really early on.
I thought you might.
But how do we get paid? We pay them with a gift voucher.
Oh, okay. So is that from a legal perspective that you decided to do that?
No, people really like gift vouchers. And also it's very easy. It means when people register, it's free to register to be a parser. When people register, they choose the gift voucher that they want. And then when they do the delivery, we can instantly email that to them.
Okay.
We don't need their bank account details or PayPal or anything like that.
Okay, so take me through the steps really simply, because I'm a simple person, of how it works. So I register. I go on to PASSEL.com.
.au.
And I register as a parser. That's what you call me. So yeah. I'm the delivery person. So I just register thinking of, you know, if I'm at shopping centre. And how do you know where I am?
So there is some magic in the technology. At its basic level, your phone knows where you are. So what we're looking for is the person who... So if you're at the shopping centre and your next door neighbour orders something, we're really looking for the person who's least inconvenienced to do the delivery.
Yeah.
So if we think you're the right person, we'll send you a message on your phone saying, hey, Jackie, do you want to deliver a shirt from Pure Baby, which is a customer we're talking to at the moment? And say, would you like to do this on your way home? And you can say yes or no.
Okay, so it just comes through as a text message.
Yeah.
And how long do I have to respond before you go and find someone else?
Yeah, so the question is, would you like to do this and would you like to deliver by a specific time? So then you can make a decision saying, that's convenient for me.
Yeah.
And when we give you 5 minutes to respond, but you might not have to pick up for another hour or an hour and a half depending on where you are.
If it works for me. And then I drop it off. And so when I drop it off to, it could be a stranger, it doesn't necessarily mean someone I know, do they scan something on my phone or what's the process that?
Yeah, we're actually trying to keep the delivery process low tech so that we don't have to have people running around with scanners and apps. Essentially, it's just a 4-digit code. So the receiver knows you're coming and they're asked to, when Jackie turns up, give her this code. And then when you confirm the code back to us, we know you've delivered. You've
delivered it, okay. What about returns? What if the person I deliver it to and they've got their, was it Pure Baby, did you say? Right. So we've got the Pure Baby item. What does Pure Baby do?
Pure Baby are a organic cotton retailer.
Okay, so they make clothes for babies?
For babies, yeah, really good stuff.
Okay, great. So the person that I've delivered it to, let's call the person John. So John's got that and he goes, oh, you know, it's the wrong size or it's the wrong colour, I want to return it. Do you do returns as well?
Yeah, returns is a massive issue for online retail.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of really good solutions for that, and we're not one of them at this stage.
Okay.
So coming back to our need to use the crowd, the reason we're targeting shopping centres such as Frankston, Southland and Chadstone is there's lots and lots of people there right now who all have to go home. If you try and reverse the process, it makes it a lot more complex.
Right.
So that might be something for the future.
Yeah, because I know for online shopping that the focus has always been on delivery and returns. But interestingly, the logistics market has been very disrupted because of Australia Post. I mean, it's been ripe for disruption. And there's a lot of other companies out there, Airtasker, Fetch, Sendal. There's a lot of organisations disrupting this, what they call the last mile delivery. What makes Parcel different from all your competitors?
Yeah, the big thing is that supply and demand is a key problem in logistics. And when you've got a pool of professional drivers, it's a challenge for the courier company to keep them busy all the time.
Mm.
And what a lot of companies are doing now is they're either not charging their customer enough and then losing money on every delivery because they're having to pay their driver more, or they're having a trouble meeting the demand. And it's particularly an issue at bad hours. So 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, you can pretty much get a courier anywhere in Australia. But once you get into evenings and weekends, which is when people are shopping online and when people might actually say, gee, I really need that now, that's when it's really, really hard to get a courier because no one's going to pay a courier $35 or $40 an hour just to sit around in the hope of getting a delivery.
Yeah.
And so the advantage of Parcel is that when at those times when it's really hard to get a professional courier, it's going to be really easier for us because the shopping centres are full of people.
Where did you come up with this idea? What was your aha moment?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it was. So home deliveries have been growing over my 20 years in logistics. And at some stage over the last few years, I was sitting with my colleagues and I said that the time will come when you're wandering around a shopping centre and your phone will just ping saying, hey, we can see where you are. We know where you're going to go home. How about you do a delivery for us? And I actually assumed it would just happen at some stage and I didn't realise I would have to do it myself.
What's been the most challenging part so far? Because I know you haven't been launched for very long. Is it the dealing with the retailers and getting them on board and signed up, or is it actually getting the passes, getting people to deliver it, or has it been the technology? What's been the most tricky bit?
It's definitely dealing with the retailers. Australian retailers are under siege right now, and they've sort of been in a comfortable space for a long time where a lot of major retailers didn't have to worry about competitors at all. And if they wanted to grow, they just opened more stores. And now with the likes of Amazon and Alibaba, and even the pure online stores like ASOS and Iconic coming in, it's made that really, really hard. So they're trying to catch up. And whether it's from a technical point of view, that in fact that they don't know where their stock is, or it's just from a business mindset point of view saying, okay, now what do we do? What's the next thing? There's a lot of catch-up. Australia Post are offering some catch-up services like Shipster, which is just what everyone else is doing.
Yes. Make sure you say that P very clearly.
Yeah. So, and it's, again, but it's more of the same. It's more, I've got to wait 3 to 5 days. And the modern consumer doesn't want to wait 3 to 5 days. But right now, it's lunchtime on Friday. If you order online now from 90% of Australian retailers, you're not going to see your order before next Friday.
Can you actually track where your parcel is? You know, on Uber, you can see where the car is and how long it's going to be till it comes and gets you. Can you do that? Can you track? So if I've ordered something and I've got a parcel, delivering something to me. Can I track on my phone where they are?
Yeah, we will be able to. We know it's not part of our pilot, but we will be able to. It's really important for the receiver to have that control.
Yeah, and that's probably from my own personal experience. I never know when they're going to turn up. You know, you've got to leave these instructions. If the gates close, do this. If the gates open, do this. And don't watch the dogs and do this. And you think, oh, I'll just go out for 5 minutes. And Murphy's Law is that they'll turn up and then they can't deliver it because they didn't find the instructions and they leave a card. And you then sometimes it's taken back into the city. Oh, my God, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, deliveries, what it is there's very few delightful experiences in home delivery.
Yeah,
and oftentimes the only contact we have with the place we've bought from is through the delivery experience. And we want to make it a delightful experience for everyone. So we want the retailers to sell more because they can deliver within 3 hours, 7 days a week, Christmas Eve. We want the delivery person to have a good experience. And we want the person at home to have said, that was really good fun. And now I want to buy again from that store. And that's really what our goal is.
So if a retailer is listening or someone that just thinks, you know what, I'm just going to register and I get a bonus $10 voucher and I help someone else out, where can they do that?
Just hit us up at parcel.com.au, which is P-A-S-S-E-L. And there's pretty clear links then to either be a delivery person or be a partner.
How many passes have you got registered?
Right now we have 310.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, which has been, and we haven't really target marketed them because we're not entirely sure who they are.
Right.
But I've got some pretty smart people starting to help me
with
that.
Yeah, so this is all part of the pilot. How long's your pilot going for?
Oh, it'll just be open-ended. It'll go forever. Okay. So the goal is, we've launched already. We want to run through to Christmas in Melbourne, expand around Australia in the new year, and then get to the US and the UK as soon as possible.
Oh, Asia? On your list?
Yeah, maybe. It's funny you mentioned that. I actually had an email today from Singapore about that, and we're being interviewed on Sunday for Indonesian TV. So there is some interest around this. It is a global problem.
Yeah.
And we think we might have hit upon the solution.
Well, we wish you continued success. Thank you, Marshall Hughes, for coming in and sharing your story. It's been most fascinating.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. We are listening to these wonderful people here today as we talk about small business and big ideas exclusively on RPFM. Hi, it's Jackie Mitchell here from Taking Care of Business, and I'm out of the studio today. I'm here at Melbourne Convention Centre at the Small Business Expo, and I've run into some familiar faces and some friends, and one in particular I am about to chat to is Robert Gerrish from Flying Solo, who we had on the show a couple of years ago, and it's nice to see you again, Robert. Welcome back to Taking Care of Business.
Oh, thank you, Jackie. Good to see you too. So, yeah, thank you for coming along.
Oh, it's good to be here, and it's also always like to sort of keep up to date with what's going on. And I'm particularly attracted to your business, Flying Solo, because it's really looking after the micro business community. So tell us a bit about Flying Solo.
Sure. Well, look, we're in our 12th year now, so we exist to support those people that are going it alone in business. So non-employing businesses, and they account for about 74% of Australian small businesses are one-person businesses, and that's who Flying Solo supports. So we have 108,000 Australian members as of this morning. I think we rolled over to 108,000. And we get involved in events like this where we get to meet a number of people that are starting up or maybe have been in business for a while and are looking to expand their business. And, yeah, that's what we do.
That's quite a common misperception. It annoys me a bit that small business, so micro businesses, so those one or two owner businesses, are always thrown into the category of SME or small business enterprise category. Mm. What's your view on that?
Yeah, look, it's changing. That's the good news, is that we are now seeing that we're being recognised much more on our own right. But I think for too often, government and indeed some corporates have always sort of looked at small business as a group, you know, as you say, the kind of SME group, and therefore sort of directed their messaging and their propositions to these small businesses. And basically, that's a mistake, because what happens is those kind of organizations end up making lots of assumptions about us, which are wrong. Now, what we know from our business, from our community, and from research that we run every couple of years, is that a lot of solo businesses are very happy to be solo businesses. Mm. You know, they're not looking to grow and expand and flip and scale or any of those things. A lot of people that are within our community are very, very happy to be working by themselves. They're often running their business, perhaps alongside looking after kids, or perhaps as a part-time thing alongside another job, or as a carer doing, you know, with other sort of calls on our time. So lifestyle businesses are a very important kind of group within our community. So that is people that are looking to create some revenue, do something they love, and do it in a way that supports the way they want to live. So that's where I think the big end of town has been getting it wrong for quite a time. But we notice now a lot more. We see language that talks about micro business. We see language that talks about solo business. And basically, it's about time. And you know, I'm really pleased that that we're being much more understood as a group of individuals. And obviously, as we move much more into this kind of gig economy age, you know, where people know they can set up a business by being an Uber driver or by renting out a room and having an Airbnb business or that sort of thing. You know, I think people are realizing, hey, maybe I can do this too. Maybe I can work by myself, run my own business. And that's okay. That, you know, that's who we support. So there are unique challenges when you're working by yourself, and we get that.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the gig economy. Mm. I was going to ask you about that, because the rise of the gig economy.
Yes.
Things like co-working spaces have certainly gone to help people sort of get out of home if they're wanting to work and get some collaboration with other micro business owners.
Most definitely. And look, and we see, you know, again from our research, we know that that is of growing appeal. Mm. A number of people who work by themselves don't want to get out of their home and don't want to go and work with others. But what co-working offers everyone now, certainly everyone within reach of a reasonable size, you know, sort of conurbational city, is that the ability to vary their work. So, you know, in our business, we have a space that's not technically co-working, but we share with other businesses. So I guess you call it a co-working space. And we're in there a couple of days a week. And then we work from our own home-based businesses the rest of the week. And that mix is just lovely. You know, when you want to come together and collaborate, you can. When you want to have your head down and just get on with your work, you know, you work from your home office. So these, and there's more and more and more opportunities and options. You know, Wi-Fi is happily, finally getting much more widespread. We can work in cafes, we can work in libraries, we can work on the bus, on the train. You know, it's, we can carry our work around in our pocket. You know, it's very different.
It is different. Do you do much with the startup community? Because that's a community that's sort of, I suppose, have got their own identity in a way and are growing as well.
Most certainly we do. I mean, we have across our website, I think it's 23-24% of our kind of usage and traffic is around our startup spaces. So we know it's very busy. But our startups are often those that have maybe got a germ of an idea but aren't sure how to develop it, or they maybe have started and things aren't going the way they want, or they start to get a little bit of traction, then they realize that they haven't got their accounting sorted out, or they haven't got their ability to work productively sorted out. So we get a lot of that. We're not huge in the sort of tech startup space. A number of other people do that really well, so we let them do that. But if anyone's in startup and they need answers and help with any aspect of the business, absolutely, you know, our forums particularly are full of sort of startup discussions, you know, and often the typical sort of conversation we get is, you know, this is what I'm thinking of doing. How do you think it's going to go? You know, what feedback have you got? And then our community will dive in and with a number of suggestions and questions. And yeah, so it, you know, it's a lively space. It's a great space to be. And say we find that a number of people, when they're in startup, are overflowing with passion. And that's fantastic to get a business started. But then you get a little way down the track and passion isn't going to cut it. You know, passion isn't a business model, but passion is certainly an accelerant of a business. But then once you've got it started, you know, you might need to work out, well, how do I do my BAS? You know, how do I find extra customers? How do I outsource work? You know, that's what we're here.
A little bit of planning will go a long way.
Yeah, totally.
For those listeners that are thinking about starting their own business or have just started, what are some key tips from your perspective, absolute no-brainers that they should know about?
Well, that's a great question. Look, the very first thing is you've got to have some idea where you're going. And unbelievably, it's very common for businesses not really to have any picture of where they're going. So what we always say is before you even spend too much time working on your plan and all those kind of slightly boring-y things that we're told we need to do, start with a vision. Where do you want to be in a year's time? And not just thinking in kind of shallow terms, but, you know, where do you want to be working? How do you want to be spending your day? What sort of people do you want around you? If you start to build a vision of where you're headed, then you can say, right, if that's where I want to be, what are the first three things I need to do to start moving in that direction? But often what happens is people start off in a business, sometimes accidentally. Typically, a lot of businesses are accidental business. Somebody says to you, hey, I know you're good at this, can you do this for me? And then the next thing you know, you're in business. But often with those sort of businesses, they get a little way down the track and they get burnt out, exhausted, and not enough money coming in, and they've kind of lost the plot. So start with the plot. Basically, where is it you're trying to get to? And we have a lot of information on our website about that. We wrote a book that talks about that in great detail. So work out where you're going, write it down, ideally visualize it, you know, create a vision board with examples of exactly where you want to be, and then you can use that to drive you, draw you in the direction you want to go.
Yeah, I've always found from my experience talking to people thinking of starting a new business or just starting a business, and you mentioned the passion. I'm glad you mentioned that because passion does not pay the bills. It's sometimes a good start.
Yes.
But what they tend to lack is a view of the gap in the market. So they're so internalised as to their passion, their idea, I want to do this, all the benefits to them.
Yeah.
And they lack that external perspective,
yes.
I suppose, to go,
yes.
What's happening in the market? Is there a gap?
Yep.
Is there a need?
Yes, totally. Well, look, there's a very large research program that was done in the US the year before last, and they looked at, I think it was a little over 300 businesses that were in startup that had failed. So businesses that had started but hadn't succeeded. These weren't just any old startups. These were startups that had received external funding of a minimum of $1 million. So somebody somewhere with every one of those businesses thought they were going to succeed, but they hadn't succeeded. They all failed. And they did some research. I forget the name of the organization, forgive me, who ran the research. But basically they looked and find out why did these businesses fail. And the overriding reason they failed was there simply wasn't a market. There wasn't a market for the product or service that these businesses were selling. So there you have a situation where lots of passion, lots of excitement, enough excitement to get people to invest $1 million or more, and still the research hadn't been done to find out if there's a market. And that's the thing that we need to focus on more and more, because it pains me, it saddens me when I hear of businesses that don't work. And to find a business that doesn't work because there is no market, that's just crazy. Because, you know, here we are at an event today, peaceful at the moment because everybody's in at a presentation, but there's hundreds of people here. You can go up to people and go, hey, this is what I'm thinking you're doing. What do you reckon? You know, and that's what our forums are full of, those sort of conversations where I'm thinking of doing this. What do you think? You know, we need to ask, and we shouldn't just ask our friends and family, because they'll all tell you it's a great idea.
Yeah, that's right. They'll tell you what you want to hear. And they want
exactly.
to be supportive, and that's important
of course,
from a psychological
of course it is.
Perspective.
Yeah.
But you're right. Ask
totally.
Other business people, have mentors
yeah.
are
yes.
always a good tip as well.
Yeah.
But I think that's a wonderful tip, just ask.
Yeah, and this also, I mean, there are so many ways now that we can test things online. You know, there's so many ways we can set up a landing page with a proposition on it. We can run very low-cost social media ads to see whether people are interested and are getting driven to it. We can check on what our conversion, you know, this sounds complicated, but it isn't. You know, a few years ago that would have been complicated. Now we can get a proposition up there, test it for a very low cost, and see, is anybody clicking? You know, is anybody interested in what I'm doing? And we've just got to start there.
Lovely to see you, Robert.
Thank
Robert
you,
Gerrish
Jackie.
From Flying Solo. Now, anyone interested in Flying Solo, where would they find more information? What's your website?
Okay, just go to flyingsolo.com.au, have a look around. You'll find a join button there that's nice and clear, and membership's free. So, yeah, please come in and join us and say hi.
Good to see you.
Thank you, Jackie.
Bye. Hi, welcome back to Taking Care of Business. I am on site today. I'm on assignment in Melbourne at Jeff's Shed at the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Centre. And I'm here at the Small Business Big Ideas Expo. And I've been sniffing around some big ideas, and I've found a wonderful idea. It's called Cool Clutch, the fashion handbag with a cool secret. And I have the founder here, Suzanne Carroll, who's going to tell me what the secret is. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi.
What's Cool Clutch? What's the secret?
The secret is that inside every fashionable designer handbag that we have in our range is also a cooler bag. So whether it's a complete cooler bag or whether it's a insulated pocket that you remove out of the fashionable handbag, then it is still insulated and a cooler bag.
How long have you been in business with Cool Clutch?
I woke up on the 30th of October 2015 with the idea that I had to find something that I could actually sell online. I specifically wanted to stay in my pyjamas and hide from the world because I hadn't been well up until that time. But it's sort of evolved a bit now, and it's I'm having to get it back out there, and it's made a huge difference to my life.
So 2 years. Okay, yes. Let's go back 2 years ago when you woke up this morning. How did that come to pass? So what made you wake up? Did you not have a job? Like, what situation were you in?
I'd been unwell for about 2 years, and I found myself unemployed. I felt totally unemployable. And I was over 50, and again, that was like, oh gosh, you know, I'm getting old. I'm too young to retire, but I'm too old to find myself a job. I need to do something with my life. And on this particular morning, I just woke up and I said to my husband, can I have some money at the mortgage, please? Because I've got this idea. I'm going to design a ladies' handbag that is also a cooler bag. So I want a handbag to hide my wine.
Was that where the idea came from? Brilliant. I love it. And you have lunch if you're wanting to take a lunch?
Well, I didn't think of that at the time. It was, to me, it was all about my wine.
Right.
I designed a bag that you put a bottle of wine on its side, so it didn't look as obvious. It looked more like a handbag, but it was a complete cooler bag. So I designed this range of 12 handbags that just held one bottle of wine for me.
Right.
I wanted to go to my girlfriend's house with a bottle of wine. I never miss an opportunity to have a glass of wine with my girlfriends. So if I have to turn up somewhere and I'm not quite sure whether we're going to actually have a glass of wine, but I like to be prepared, so I would have a handbag that would keep it cool. So when I got there, and not so much cool at the start, I made it insulated as a cooler bag at the start because I drink white wine in the summer, but I also drink red wine in the winter. But there's nothing more unladylike than turning up at a girlfriend's house who's going to offer you a cup of coffee with a bottle of wine in a paper bag. So what I wanted to do was always be ready for that moment where my girlfriend said, do you fancy a glass of wine, that I would be able to get it out of my very beautiful handbag.
So I can see instinctively I was attracted to you and your
yes.
business. So that is the secret. So did you, when you designed it, did you engage experts with the design, or did you just base it on the current handbags you had?
That would be sensible.
So, oh, okay.
No, that
would
be sensible. I connected some manufacturers through Alibaba. Within 2 weeks, I went to Hong Kong and met with three manufacturers and talked to them about my idea. It sort of evolved a bit as we were talking into bigger bags. We've also got a bag that already existed out in the world where you actually put the cask wine bladder inside the cooler bag, stick the nozzle out the side, and you can pour your glass of wine from your handbag. So I thought,
brilliant.
Well, I have to have that. Other people have got it. I'll have that as well. But I went that one step further and I made that pocket removable so that you could actually take it out, put it in the fridge, keep your lunch cool. And then as I've spoken to people, I'm from Gisborne, Victoria. So I'm regional Victoria. And
whereabouts?
In Gisborne.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So I do the market just because I now want to talk to people and get feedback.
Yeah, it's an easy market research, isn't
it? It's fantastic. It's very cheap to do. It's a lot of work. You set up your tent and everything like that. But talking to people, and I'd say, oh, I've got this handbag that keeps your wine cool. And they'd say, oh, I put my lunch in it. And I'd go, really? what a good idea. Okay, so I better make one that's slightly bigger, because if you're anything like me, I've always got food in my handbag or my cooler bag, my lunch bag. So we've ended up with 71 different handbags.
71 different designs?
Yes.
And
yes.
Are they all named? How have you?
Oh, yes.
What's the brand strategy?
The first range was all named after my family. I've got a very large
family. All
females?
Family.
All females.
Okay.
Between us, my husband and I, I've got 5 children. So they've all got, he's got boys, but they have partners. So it was them, our grandchildren, my sister, my nieces, my nephew's wife. I just named them all of everybody I knew.
Which is the biggest seller?
Actually, Stephanie is the biggest seller, which is unusual because I met Stephanie here at the Small Business Festival.
Yeah.
She had won the Australia Post competition in Alice Springs, and they brought her down here as her prize. And we connected and we got on really well, and we now are friends on Facebook. And I just saw this blush handbag as really suiting Stephanie, so I just called this handbag Stephanie. But it's strange that I should be back here.
You're
again.
Back here.
Completely
very
different.
Very serendipitous, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
When you woke up that morning and you had the idea, and then 2 weeks later you're in Hong Kong talking to suppliers, in that 2 weeks, had you started putting something down on paper? Have you had a business plan or some sort of planning when you started your business?
No.
You didn't? Did you do one at any time?
No.
Oh, that worries me. Why not?
Well, because I was too busy getting excited. Wow. I was just going to do this handbag, and it was going to carry my wine. And I think I just got really... I also wasn't 100% well still. So even last year being here, and the reason that Stephanie got a bag named after her was I still wasn't well, so I was still hiding from the world, and I spent a lot of time hiding behind a pillar. And when Yvonne Adele said, oh, you know, we've got to do this networking, I was very lucky to actually be able to connect with somebody that was quite a gentle person, so it wasn't like I didn't feel intimidated by. So I haven't really, up until now, sat down and really worked on my business. I've worked in it, and I've continued to hide in my own little world, but now it's time for me to shine.
Okay, and what steps are you taking to do that? How are you doing that?
I've connected with a mentor. I think that's going to be really important for me, because we're working on my self-esteem as well, because without that I can't propel Cool Clutch the way it needs to go. And I've got a marketing team that are in Sydney, so they are really running my brand, and that allows me to do things like this, get out, talk to people, show my passion.
Do you still have the office at home?
Yes, I do.
And does that work for you?
At the moment, but I can see that Cool Clutch is going to be so enormous that we will outgrow that fairly quickly, which I'm fine with. I would love to be one of the largest employers of staff in the Macedon Ranges region. So I would love to have a big shop, factory, offices. And
create a co-working space. Everyone's doing it.
Yes.
And that'd be great. I don't know, does Macedon Ranges have a co-working space?
There is one at the Kyneton Business Hub.
Right.
And I heard that there's one in Melton. But I think there might be one in the Gisborne South area. But I don't know of it very well, if it is there.
So your channel for sales is all online and it's a couple of markets.
It is. Most of it is from Facebook. So I do a lot of interacting with my customers. I ask them questions. I get them to name bags, because when I run out of family, I then turn to the Facebook followers and said, right, okay, what does this bag look like? What would you say the personality of this bag? What name would you give it? And of course, most people say, oh, you know, name it after me. So I have a lovely customer that I've never met called Vivian that has an orange handbag named after her, who absolutely loves our product and is a great advocate for Cool Clutch, and I'm sure she's telling all her girlfriends all about it.
How many bags have you sold? Do you know your numbers?
No.
You need to, don't you?
Yes, I do. I've been too busy.
Because it'd be great to say I've sold 1,000 or I've sold 500 or how many you've sold.
Yes, yes.
That'd be nice
yes,
to know.
Would.
Will you come back and talk to me and let me know? Because I'm fascinated by your business journey. And I'd love to keep in touch and see what the next alliteration of it is.
Thank you.
And I wish you continued success, Suzanne Carroll.
Thank you very much.
Cool Clutch. Now, if people want to look at your handbags online, where would they go?
Coolclutch.net.
Excellent.
Very easy.
And your Facebook? You said you
Yes, it's The Cool Clutch.
Ah,
yeah,
and that's so. Quite a big Facebook community
yes,
that you've
is.
Got there as
yes.
well.
Yeah.
I wish you, as I said, continued success.
Thank you.
And I look forward to our next meeting, and hopefully there might be a bag. Is there a bag called Jackie?
Not yet.
Oh, there you go. Stay tuned.
Yeah, absolutely. What colour would it be?
Red.
Oh, no, we've got a red. It's a Marie. You're going to have to think of something else.
Strawberry
for you.
Or raspberry?
Oh, yeah.
There
oh,
we
nice.
Are. We'll leave it there.
Nice.
Thanks, Suzanne Carroll.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, it's Jackie Mitchell here again, and I'm on site at the Small Business Big Marketing. I'm here at Jeff's Shed at the Melbourne Convention Centre in Melbourne, and I've bumped into the CEO of her business, Susie Daphnis. Welcome to Taking Care of Business.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, tell me about her business. I'm assuming it's a business, it's for business women. Is that right?
It is, and for over 20 years, we've provided mentoring and training and loads of free resources for women who are running businesses.
And how long has it been running for?
It's over 20 years now.
So you've seen a lot of change, particularly with the advent of technology. I imagine there's been lots of change.
Right. So that's been one big change. So running a business, it's so much easier to get in. The barriers are lower. The entry costs are much lower. And our reach is much wider. So even if we're a local business, we can be known by the world. And there's the plus and minuses to that. Because not everyone's really tech savvy. But what we haven't seen change is that people still struggle with identifying their ideal client, knowing how to market to them and really understand their pain points and to grow. Because often we'll get into business and we're good at one thing. We might be a good marketer, we might be a good money person. But what we don't often have is command of how do I hire my first employee? And then how do I keep them? How do I train them? What systems do I need to grow? And so we find people fall into these four areas. They've either got a new business that's not really viable, or they've been running off their own steam for a while and now they're tired, they're almost burnt out and things are starting to decline, or they're stuck and they just don't know how to get over that hump. And then there's the glorious people who are growing year on year. And so what we aim to do is help move people through those bumps in the road.
With the in the last 20 years working with a lot of business women, in my experience, confidence has been a big issue. Have you found that?
Absolutely. And it's one of the most popular topics when we talk to women. And for over 20 years, we've been inducting women into our Business Women's Hall of Fame. And every year we ask them for their strategies for success, and we always ask them about confidence. And there's actually, thank you for asking, there's actually these five things, I don't know if I can remember them all off the top of my head, that what they say are their keys to building your confidence. The first is to surround yourself with great people. So that's not just the people who work for you, but that's your networks, that's your peers, that's your mentors. The other is to grow your skills. So the more skilled we are at something, the more confident we are in ourselves. So the first time you might launch an email newsletter, you might have a lot of trepidation. But the better you become at that as your online marketing, it tends to go into the recesses of our mind and happens a little more automatically, that we don't have to think so hard. It's not as stressful. The other thing is to have a vision that's bigger than ourselves. The fourth thing is to have a plan. And unfortunately, a lot of small business owners don't have a plan. And so what happens when we don't have a plan is that every little bright, shiny object can take us off course. So we work with women to help them find their focus. All those things have us get up in the day, know what we're going to focus on, know what direction we're going, and that builds confidence. And confidence, you know, you just need a little bit, and then it can build from there, because every little win we have boosts our confidence to then take a bigger step to be more bold.
Are you finding a growth in more business women or I suppose more women starting businesses?
That statistic, if you look at the Bureau of Statistics, goes up and down. So I'm not sure what the stat is at the moment. What I know is that more and more women are growing successful businesses, and not all women, but the women that commit to their education, mentoring, getting the support they need, coming to an event like this where they're meeting other people, they're broadening their education. Those things are fundamentals. We can't just grow a business on hope.
Yeah, absolutely. Or passion.
Or passion.
It annoys me a bit when they go, I want to follow my passion. Passion doesn't always make you money.
Passion might be the thing that, when you're having a tough day,
yes,
we'll pick you back up. But without sound business skills, without a strong network, the passion alone, unfortunately, we've found, won't cut it.
So if someone listening now is a businesswoman listening to this and is thinking about starting a business or is just starting a business, what's an absolute no-brainer tip for her?
There's a lot of information online, but knowing what, where to start can be the hardest thing. For me, to be around finding an organization that has like-minded people that you can network with and really committing to your education. One of the things we do is we help people audit their skill set so that they know, one, what stage of business they're in, but also where their vulnerable points might be. So you might be a really great consultant, but your ability to market and convert leads is terrible. So we would help you focus there so that you have leads coming in. I think know thyself is one of the underlying things. But if I was just starting out, I would definitely be building my skills and surrounding myself with great people.
Now, you've been doing this for 20 years. What's your background? How did you get started into this?
I had my own events business in my mid-20s, and I came across this organisation. It was then called the Australian Business Women's Network. And I used it to network and to meet other women, and then I bought the business. And so I started and grown businesses here and in the US. And this business here has my heart because I'm really passionate about seeing women reach their full potential, because a business is our doorway to freedom. It can produce the revenue and the satisfaction, the creative outlet for us to do what we love every day. And that's our tagline here at Her Business, is do what you love every day.
And talk about the US. You're now growing her business
into the US,
Asia,
yep,
and New Zealand,
yep,
and into the US now. Yep. How far is your growth strategy into the US?
Most of our focus has been on Australia and New Zealand because we've always been here. But one of the things that we're doing is starting to build strategic alliances in the US that will really help us leverage. So one of the things, and this is a great lesson for small business owners, we think we have to do things on our own. And isolation is one of the biggest problems with small business. But if we can reach out and we can create relationships, strategic alliances, then our growth becomes inevitable and much, much easier. So for us, the plan, at least over the next 12 months, is to grow our membership internationally with a bit of a focus on the US.
Susie, do you have a philosophy or a pearl of wisdom? So if you're having a bad day, have you got something, a quote, a favourite quote or a saying, or someone said something to you once to sort of keep you going?
Oh, there are so many that I could draw on. The one that I want to quote is, I actually don't know the exact words to, but it's something to the effect of, we may never know what we are here to do, but we can assume that we're fulfilling our purpose if we commit ourselves to, the quote says, the highest advantage of others, to helping others. And so for us, it's about helping small business owners reach their full potential. And that's what keeps me going 20 years later and still enthusiastic about what I do.
Excellent. Nicely done. I wish you continued success.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.